Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We welcome in our good friend. He has been with the Houston Chronicle for 40-plus years covering the NFL. And, of course, he is our colleague here at Sports Radio 610, the General, the Hall of Famer, John McClain, joining us on the show. John, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
We're doing good, John. We're trying to find bits and pieces that can help us cobble together a win over the Ravens here this week. And we'll get to that in just a second, but what did you pull from the Chiefs game this past week that the Texans can carry into Sunday that gives us a little more positivity?
I don't have anything positive to come out of that game as it pertains to the Ravens. I expect the Ravens are not going to beat them 41-7, but they're a much better team. They showed it last season, even though they didn't get any farther in the playoffs than the Texans, and they're off to a great start with the way they walloped the Browns, who've lost 16 consecutive openers. That's a stat that just blows me away. But Baltimore didn't have to run the ball then because Lamar Jackson had such a great game throwing. So I expect they'll come in, they'll run. It's strange to me how bad the Texans' run defense has been now for the last 10 games after being so good. And I picked them to start 0-3, and I haven't seen anything that makes me change that prediction.
You know, I read your article in the Chronicle about that the other day, John, and I got to thinking. I'm watching that game last year, and for one, it wasn't just J.J. Watt being gone. You know, I think at various times last year they had guys playing along the front seven in backup roles at the linebacker spot. You know, that just flat out weren't doing their jobs, and I expected it to get better this year is the problem. I thought that they would get all of their horses back and maybe add a couple of things. If anything was really surprising to me in the Kansas City game, it was that, yeah, the run defense was just abysmal.
Through O'Brien's first 5 years, they never were worse than 13th against the run. That was in 2017 when they were 4-12. And then in 2018, they were third, 81 a game. Then they came back for the first 9 games last year and only had allowed 84. Then they go to Baltimore, give up 256, and then they've gone straight down the toilet over the last 10, giving up 164 yards a game rushing, and that's not going to cut it.
No, definitely not this weekend because the Ravens ran for over 250 against them last year. John McClain joining us for his weekly visit. Hey, John, something Seth and I have been talking about more off the air than on the air, although we've probably brought it up on the air. Did Lonnie Johnson play at all in the first half of the Chiefs game? And if he didn't, because he played a ton in the second half, do we know why Lonnie Johnson was not out there and Vernon Hargraves was playing outside corner to start that game?
No idea. Johnson ended up playing 42% of the snaps. Roby was the only, and Reed were the only DBs to go the distance. So I don't have any idea. We can ask Bill O'Brien and Anthony Weaver about that today and tomorrow because I was surprised that Hargraves was outside. I was surprised rookie John Reed played as much as he did, and obviously it's based on what they think is the performance, what they go by the performance. And Reed, I know they liked him a lot, but, man, that was surprising to me when he played as much as he did.
Is there – what's the level of optimism, at least, that maybe you have in Gary and Conley coming back and being healthy anytime soon?
I don't know, Seth. They play – they're so quiet about that. You know, he had surgery, came back. He was full bore in practice for quite a while, and then they put him on injured reserve, and he has to miss three games, so I don't have any idea, because if you ask them, they're going to tell you everybody's coming along fine.
Well, I'm just going to tell you, Seth, just from what I observed at camp, because Conley practiced a lot. He missed a couple practices. And, John, I don't know if you saw the same thing I did. I mean, there's a lot to focus on out there, and we don't get replays, obviously. But Conley was getting beat by guys that shouldn't be beating him. Like, he was getting beat routinely by Stevie Mitchell at practice. He got beat badly by Kenny Stills in the scrimmage. And he was not moving great in between plays. There's a reason he was running with the twos the whole time. He was not moving great in between plays. You know what I mean?
That's what I guess I wonder is, Sean, was it like that the entire training camp? And if that was the case, as all these other guys are getting breaks and rests and hardly out there at all, I wonder why Gary and Conley was getting so much work if he was obviously ailing.
Yeah. Well, he did get a break. He was not practicing for if there were 10 practices that you and I were at, John, I would say Conley missed like practices 3, 4, and 5 or something like that. He missed like 3 or 4 practices. And then at that point, he probably wants to be out there because he's running with the twos. He's got to get his job back. John, what do you think about the first performance of some of these investments that Bill O'Brien made? Like, I guess specifically, they made a big investment in Whitney Mercilus, big investment in Zach Cunningham, big investment in Randall Cobb. These are all sort of, I think, referendum kind of signings on Bill O'Brien. How are we 1 week in with these guys?
Well, I'll be honest with you guys. I don't pay much attention to one game because they've been so bad in their first games. Lost 4 in a row, 5 of 6. I want to see a better body of work. None of those guys in the front seven played worth a darn, I don't think, because they couldn't stop the run. P.J. Hall was the one that I thought played the best. He played 17 snaps, had 4 unassisted tackles, and didn't expect anything from him. Charles Amenihu came up with goose eggs in his start, and that was disappointing. And then a 3-4, linebackers are supposed to stop the run, and they didn't. And then Clyde Edwards-Helaire faked some of them out of their jock. And that was not that Edwards-Helaire did well, but that he ran for 138 yards, and their tackling was bad. But not being able to have a preseason is no excuse, because their bad run defense goes back to last season. After their first two games last season, in the next 7, they only gave up 74 yards a game rushing. And then the Ravens exposed something because they've been so bad since. And the Chiefs, you think, well, if one team's going to throw the ball against you and not run, it would be Kansas City. So I thought Edwards-Helaire might have about 70 yards rushing and 70 receiving. And instead, he looked like Kareem Hunt did his rookie year when he led the NFL in rushing.
John, look, I've been around long enough to know that you can get completely worked over in the first game, and it doesn't necessarily mean anything a week or 2 or 3 weeks later, and that you can rebound very quickly. I'm having a hard time, like, genuinely believing that. I keep telling myself that right now, but I'm having a hard time believing it. Why don't you put me on your knee and tell me a story about how everything's going to be all right?
I can't do that. I think they're going to start 0-3, and I picked them start 0-3 and finish 10-6 when the schedule gets a lot easier. They look like a team that was playing a preseason game. The Chiefs look like the defending Super Bowl champions. The Ravens look like my Super Bowl pick, which they were, along with New Orleans. And so this early schedule, I think they're going to get hammered. One of the things I wrote today was, when they play the Ravens, they need to play the way they did against the Patriots. They're a different team, but the Patriots were 10-1, number one defense in the league. And Deshaun Watson had a great game. Watson needs to get better protection. I saw a great stat that he got hurried 60% of his throws, and nobody else in the NFL had as many as 20%. And most of that came from the right side, Titus Howard and Zach Fulton, who were terrible. And I can understand Howard because he hadn't played since midway through last year. But you talk about two guys that need to bounce back. It's those two. They have a lot more confidence that Howard will bounce back instead of Fulton.
John, that was the worst. I asked you to tell me a nice story, and you just shut me down immediately.
I can't.
I have this vision of you being Santa Claus some year, and some little kid is like, Santa, can I have a slack line for Christmas? And you'll say, that's a pathetic, stupid idea, Johnny.
Yeah, John.
See me in December.
John would be the Santa who actually pulled out whether or not kids were good or bad that year. Like, well, let's see here. Runs his finger down. Nope, you were bad this year. Sorry.
John. I'm glad you brought up that stat about the pressure rates. This is driving me a little bit crazy because people cite these advanced stats like they're the word of God. And I do too, because you get these great stats. But Sean and I were talking about this morning. It was bad. He was pressured a lot. But we saw one site say that he was pressured 45% of the time. Then some other site says that he was pressured 65% of the time. Like a 20% margin of error is pretty damn big.
One of the things that when Watson takes off, he's looking to run. Mahomes takes off, he's got his eyes down the field. Now, he's a better runner than Mahomes, but everything about Kansas City's offense is throwing the ball first. And Lamar Jackson gets great, great blocking in the pocket. And he bounces back there, and the back foot hits, and he hesitates 1 second, and he throws the ball down the middle of the field most of the time. And where how many times does Watson bounce back and get an extra second to find receivers down the field? It's not often. And one of the things that bothered me most about that game, they're down 31-7 with about 8.5 minutes left, and there's no urgency. I'm not saying go to a no huddle, but the play clock was ticking down.
I
went back and watched the game. I thought, you know what? They're letting way too much time tick off between plays. They got to play faster, and that's something I'm going to write about for Friday after we get to talk to Tim Kelly tomorrow.
John, okay, when you're writing about it, include the fact that Deshaun just let the clock run out at the end of the third quarter. There's like 30 seconds left and the clock's ticking and he's standing there and he's getting guys set up and he's standing and he's looking at the sideline and he's gesturing and he's moving guys around. And 25, 30 seconds runs off the clock and the quarter's over. Like, you need to run a play, dude. You got to get a play in before the end of the quarter.
Yeah, they were kind of lackadaisical at the end of the first half last year. They let 30-some seconds wind down, and then they had a field goal attempt at the end, but it's like they screwed themselves out of two or three opportunities to run more plays.
Yeah, hurry, hurry, hurry. All right, we got to hurry to a break. John McClain is with us, the Hall of Famer. He joins us each and every Wednesday in this hour. Up next, DeAndre Hopkins, his first game as a Cardinal. Is this how we expect things to go for DeAndre Hopkins? If it does, what's the referendum going to be on that trade? We'll talk about that with John McClain next.
I want to give a game ball to a new member of our team. Had 14 catches, 152 yards. From the moment I walked in this building, man, I felt something special about this team. I promise you. I know we got what it takes to get what we want, but it's one day at a time. Let's keep working.
Keep working. 1, 2, 3, keep working. All right, so that was DeAndre Hopkins. He is on pace.
He also said after that, he said, let's keep working, but, you know, I'll be on the sidelines. I'd prefer not to practice. But you guys, keep working.
Let's keep working, on Sundays. Yeah.
I, for one, am cool with that arrangement. Yeah. As long as he keeps doing what he's doing.
It worked out pretty well for a few years here. Last I checked, if I look at the numbers, as we welcome John McClain back in with us here on a Wednesday on Sports Radio 610, Payne and Pendergast. So, John, DeAndre Hopkins is on pace for 224 catches for over 2,400 yards and 16 game balls on the season is what he's on pace for. Now, did you get a chance to watch any of D-Hop this weekend, John?
I saw the highlights. I'm happy for him. He got the contract he wanted, and he came out and celebrated it in style, and that's what he did here, and that's what he's going to do for the Cardinals.
John, so you've seen the numbers now on the deal. I believe we probably talked about the contract itself last week. We did, I don't recall. So, but now knowing what the numbers are on the Hopkins deal, on the Hopkins contract, do you feel like that's something that the Texans actually might have been able to do? He's averaging $18.8 million over the next 5 years when you add in the 3 years he already was under contract.
They could have done anything they wanted to do. They didn't do it because they didn't have the money. They didn't do it because they didn't want to redo it with 3 years left and set a precedent. When they did that with Watt, it cost them Dwayne Brown, and I don't think they wanted to do that again. So, yeah, they could afford it to give him that kind of deal.
So, I guess the grand experiment is that, hey, DeAndre's really, really good, but hey, he's not all that fast, and all these other guys are super fast. Where was all the speed on the field on Thursday night?
I think it was in hibernation. Watson said afterward, when we asked him, he wanted to throw the ball down the field more. What he didn't say was he didn't have time. And I think Cobb and Cooks looked like guys who were playing in a preseason game in a new team. The only guy on offense, well, two, David Johnson and Jordan Akins. Akins played 81% of the snaps. Fells played 40-something. And O'Brien told us on Monday, if Akins is healthy, he's staying on the field. And that's a good thing because he runs with the ball so well. And I think you'll see Cooks and Cobb get more incorporated into the offense once they have more time together. And maybe it'll be this week.
You know, John, I hate talking about coaching hot seat stuff this early in the season. Usually I'd be incredibly opposed to it. But they just got shellacked is the problem. And all the new pieces other than David Johnson didn't really show anything. And I guess I'm fully fine with talking about coaching hot seat stuff right now because of that. I'm looking at this offense and I'm looking at all the moves Bill O'Brien pulled in the offseason, which were largely all to help the offense. I mean, you signed a safety nobody had ever heard of to help out on defense, I suppose. But what's the benchmark here? I mean, Bill O'Brien's never had better than the 17th ranked passing offense. So is it, hey, if they're the 12th ranked passing offense, then that's awesome and he gets to keep his job. What level does Bill O'Brien have to get to keep his job?
Well, I don't think him keeping his job has anything to do with the passing offense. It has to do with winning and losing. If they bomb out and have a losing season, I could see him getting fired. But considering they've won the division four of the last five times, they've started with a loss. I think and including 0-3 in 2018 when everybody wanted him fired, I think they would have to be really bad for him to be fired. And it doesn't have anything to do with the offense.
Sports Radio 610. Breaking news, powered by Radio.com Sports. Brought to you by the Dell Technologies Small Business Podference. Go listen at Radio.com/Dell.
I don't know that we've ever had a breaking news sounder when John McClain's been on with us, but this is big news. It's college football related. ESPN reporting a report by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that the Big Ten is expected to announce a return to football in October. Sources confirming to ESPN. There'd been a story yesterday about Nebraska, either the president of the school or some politician, somebody got caught on a hot mic saying that the Big Ten was going to announce a return to football last night. It didn't happen last night. Maybe it got postponed just because of that very reason. But it sounds like the Big Ten is going to be back joining the Big 12, the SEC, and the ACC as Power 5 conferences who are going to play college football. So, John, did you get a chance to watch any college football this weekend? What do you think about the Big Ten coming back here?
Well, I think
big COVID news.
The president's cratered after they said they weren't going to, and the power of the dollar speaks. And the coming back in October will be weird, of course. And it's funny how everybody, all the politicians, were pushing for the Big Ten because they need those states where nobody cares about the Pac-12. Truthfully, everything's so discombobulated in college sports right now with players opting out, and I can't keep up. The only one I'm cared about is Saturday at McLean Stadium between the Cougars and the Bears. Last event I covered at the Waco Tribune Herald in my 3.5 years there while I was at Baylor was the U of H first game in the Southwest Conference. They came up there in Baylor Stadium, beat Baylor 23-5. And 2 weeks later, I told them I was coming to the Chronicle. So I thought about that yesterday when I was doing one of my two shows in Waco and the memories it brought back. And so I'll be watching the Cougars and the Bears.
Yeah, kudos to those guys for just throwing a game together.
Pickup game.
Just decided to have it. It's like deciding to have a picnic. You know?
Shirts and skins.
The weather's going to be nice. Let's just go out and have a picnic.
Yeah. How many games can the Big Ten play considering they're starting in October?
Seth and I talked about this. I think, John, their goal is to play 9 regular season games and stage a conference championship game the same weekend that the Big 12, SEC, and ACC plan on playing their conference championship.
That way they could Ohio State can get in the Final Four.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, boy, you know, there's some I'm just thinking of some of these poor kids that have been just living life as a normal college student with like time to take a nap in the afternoon and everything. And maybe they let their workouts slide a little bit because they didn't think they were going to be playing football this year. And now all of a sudden they're like 2 days from now, they're going to be get screamed at by their coach and vomiting on the sideline as they try to run gassers.
It's funny you said some of the teams have still been practicing, Seth.
Michigan, Ohio State.
Yeah, they're still practicing. Yeah. They're still practicing. Okay, so if you missed it, that's the breaking news. The Big Ten, it looks like, is returning to football in October. So we get more college football on the schedule each and every weekend. I guess, John, just circling back to the NFL, did you get a chance to watch Tom Brady and Drew Brees? Is Tom Brady washed, John? Is he done?
I did watch that game because I picked the Saints to win, and I picked the Saints to win the Super Bowl over Baltimore. And the Saints didn't play great, but the Buccaneers look like a team that was discombobulated on offense. I think Tampa's defense is going to be much better than a lot of people thought. And Brady's 43 years old, playing with a new team. Gronk's coming back after a year off. You got to think they'll be better. And I thought it was very interesting the way Bruce Arians didn't baby Brady for his postgame and the next day criticism like he does most of his players. I'm sure a lot of people like that.
Oh yeah, Arians went in on Tom Brady a little bit. Like he did not mince words when it came to Brady's performance in that game. And John, other quarterbacks just changing, veteran quarterbacks changing teams. Phillip Rivers looked a lot like the Phillip Rivers with the Chargers, where he threw for a billion yards and he threw two back-breaking interceptions.
That's what they got for $25 million, and that's not what they wanted, of course. Gardner Minshew, the second, outplayed him, three touchdowns, didn't throw for a lot of yards, but he was so efficient. And to me, that was the biggest upset of the weekend because so many people had picked Indianapolis to win the division. Because people love Chris Ballard, the GM, and Frank Reich, the coach, they picked them to every year to win the division, and they've only won one playoff game. That was over the Texans. And so that's good. Doug Marrone has control of the roster now, the way Bill O'Brien did last year when he wasn't GM, and Marrone isn't either, but it's his baby. And that's one reason he's weeding out players that he thought didn't fit in line with what he wants to get accomplished. And I was real happy for him and them. And except Washington was number two, but boy, that seeing Jaguars tied for first and seeing Washington by itself in first place, those are the two strangest things to come from the first weekend.
That's John McClain. He joins us each and every week in the 8 o'clock hour. Up next, we will circle back to Texans and the Ravens. What are some of the things that we can that the Texans might be able to hang their hat on to compete with the Ravens this weekend, try to bring home an upset victory at NRG Stadium? We'll go through some keys to the game with John McClain next. All right, it is Payne and Pendergast Sports Radio 610. John McClain with us for his weekly visit in the 8 o'clock hour. Just real quick, couple things here. Brett McMurphy, college football writer for college football insider for the Stadium Network, he said that here are the details. The Big Ten will start Friday, October 23rd. So pretty late in October. Their plan is to play 8 games in 8 weeks, culminating with a December 19th title game. That's the same Saturday that all the other conferences are planning their title game. So this would presumably get the Big Ten into the mix to be eligible for the college football playoff. Now, with 8 games, they're going to be playing 2 less games than some of these conferences. My guess is that's not going to impact Ohio State at all. If Ohio State plows through the Big Ten convincingly and they go 8-0 and they win the conference title game, they'll get a spot in the playoffs. It may impact a team that makes a run, goes undefeated, and isn't Ohio State. They may need to be more impressive because it's a selection committee deal. So that's how the Big Ten is going to work things here. A reminder, too, about an hour from now, Bill O'Brien's press conference for a Wednesday. We will carry that live here on Payne and Pendergast. So we're going to carry Bill O'Brien's press conference, which brings us to this text message. Someone texts in, it makes sense now. The Texans have to overpay all their unknowns to convince them to come here because no one wants to play for the Texans while O'Brien is there. John, I want to get your thoughts on that just because I think Seth and I are appropriately critical of O'Brien on this show. I think we point out the good and the bad in a pretty fair fashion. And that's why I'm prefacing it by saying I don't know that that's the case. I think people sometimes get their own emotions about Bill O'Brien and project them onto NFL players. I think there's guys that like playing for Bill O'Brien, John.
Well, first of all, that's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. 99% of the players don't talk to the head coach. The head coach doesn't walk around the locker room BSing with them. That's just maybe some do, but that's not the way it's done here. It wasn't done that way under Kubiak, and it's not done that way under O'Brien. So, and there are a lot of players that come here that don't get overpaid. So why would they want to come here? I mean, they've only trying to win the division for the fifth time in 6 years. Sure, they'd rather go to Cleveland where they've lost 16 in a row, or Detroit where Patricia's blown 9 games in the fourth quarter of the last 2 games, where the Cowboys are like 1-8 in one score games. The Texans were 8-3 last year. So, of course, they don't want to come here.
Well, and I do think that, you know, without even talking about, okay, how much is a division championship worth or anything like that, I think sometimes we lose perspective here because we get frustrated with Bill O'Brien because we wonder whether he's just another Marvin Lewis. Like, does he have a ceiling? We get very frustrated at this team's inability to go further into the playoffs. But when you start talking about the dregs of the NFL and you start talking about teams that people don't want to go to, there's generally only a few, like at any given time in the NFL. It used to be the Bengals were like that. I think they've changed a little bit over the last couple of years. You see DJ Reader going there. But yeah, it's like you gotta realize, and John, I was looking in your mailbag, that you put out on Monday, where one of your readers said that, you know, the Texans are losers and they don't know how to win and they never lose. Again, they consistently have winning records. They just don't win big. They haven't won what we want them to win. So just the simple contention that people don't want to come here because they're losers, I guess I'd have to ask for evidence of that. Because Tyrann Mathieu came here specifically because he thought it would be a good place for him to springboard onto a better deal, which he did. Bradley Roby came here for less money specifically because he thought it would be a good place to try to work a better deal. And that's what happened. I would say I think it's quite the contrary. And I think that for a lot of free agents, it's somewhat of a destination, not because they love or hate or don't dislike Bill O'Brien. That has nothing to do with it. A lot of it is simply it's known as one of the at least average franchises in the NFL. And it's also got Deshaun Watson. And that's a lure for a lot of guys, especially playing with Deshaun Watson.
And a lot of guys have re-signed contracts here when they didn't have to. And so, no, I had a column one on my Nashville show yesterday. The guy just going on and on about O'Brien was terrible and horrible. I let him get it off his chest. And I said, look, I'm not going to try to change your mind, but if your definition is terrible and horrible for O'Brien, what do you, and I listed some other coaches, what's worse than terrible or horrible, but you're not going to change your people's minds on that anymore. You're going to change their mind on the protesting and the Black Lives Matter issues. People made up their mind and some want to learn and some don't. And people are frustrated because division title is no longer good enough here. People want to see them get beyond the second round of the playoffs for the first round and go to the Super Bowl.
I guess, you know what, I'm glad you brought that up because we talked about this after O'Brien's press conference the other day where, you know, he had said, you know, unless you win a championship these days. I disagree with the notion that there was ever a time where winning division titles was the benchmark, and as long as you did that, people were going to be A-okay with it. Because I think Schottenheimer eventually got run out of Kansas City. You know, even though he had great regular season winning records, he didn't make playoff pushes. Marvin Lewis won a whole bunch of division championships, but I don't think anybody's sitting here saying, like, wow, boy, Marvin Lewis, back then, that's when people really respected the division championship. At some point, there's just, it's a natural for people to feel stagnant, isn't it? That, okay, look, we've been stuck here with this glass ceiling over us for some time. It's time to push forward.
Of course, Marvin Lewis never won a playoff game. And Belize O'Brien's won 2, even though they blew that Kansas City game last year. When a division title is important, it's when you're coming off a 2-14 season trying to rebuild a team. You shoot for a division title, then you shoot for the Super Bowl. And I've never heard the Texans say that the division title was the most important thing. Every year their goals are the same, whether you ask players or the coaches. They just haven't been able to do it, and I haven't seen anything right now, I think, but that makes me believe they're among the best teams in the AFC. But last year, the way it broke in the playoffs, if they hadn't blown that Kansas City game, they were coming home for what be one step short of the Super Bowl against the former Oilers, so you never know how it's going to break. But right now, it's clear to me at this early juncture that Baltimore and Kansas City are the best teams in the AFC, and Pittsburgh may get better and better because of the great defense if Big Ben stays healthy.
Yeah, I've been saying all offseason, they are playing the three best teams in the AFC to start the season, the Houston Texans are. John McClain joining us for his weekly visit. It's funny, John, when you were naming off some of the teams that are terrible, as we were talking about, you know, why would a guy go to Cleveland? Why would a guy go to Detroit? I feel like the complete polar opposite end when it comes to culture might be the team the Texans are playing this weekend in the Baltimore Ravens, who have gone through different coaches, different general managers, a slew of different players, and yet they still seem to have that vibe that's built around that hard-hitting defense, that's built around finding gems in the middle rounds of the draft and things like that. What is it about the Baltimore Ravens that allows them to, by and large, I know they had a little bit of dip towards the end of the Flacco era there, but by and large, over the 20-plus years that they've been the Ravens, that they've existed in Baltimore, they've managed to win and win in a certain way.
That started with the philosophy that general manager Ozzie Newsome had, and then Eric DaCosta, who replaced him, was his longtime right-hand man. And then with John Harbaugh, when he came over from Philadelphia, and even before Harbaugh, they wanted to be like Pittsburgh. That's their main rival, be a physical team that was great on defense and was a good offense, but was a great defense, because that's the way you had to beat the Steelers. And that's the way they're going to have to beat the Steelers this year. And as good as Baltimore has been, since the Ravens were 4-5 in 2018, they are 19-3. And they've been great regular season, but the last 2 years, they haven't gotten any farther than the Texans in the playoffs. And I did a talk show up there this week, and I pointed that out. I said, are people frustrated that they haven't been getting farther like they did when they won the Super Bowl? And because they won a Super Bowl, it's not a big issue as it is to them up there, especially they all love John Harbaugh. So people are not hammering them. You got to get beyond the second round of the playoffs, because it wasn't too long ago when they did.
Hey, John, Sean and I are going to be able to do our pregame show and the postgame show from the stadium. So we're going to get to watch the game in the stadium. This is my question for you. I'm going to lean on your ethical prowess here. In the press box, there is no cheering. We're not allowed, for people listening, you might not know this, you're not allowed to cheer or boo or do any other things that fans might do in the press box. They want to keep it a very professional environment. So obviously, Sean and I wouldn't be doing that in the press box. But we're also going to have the opportunity to watch the actual game from a separate spot in the stadium. And I think that Sean, me, and some of the other hosts from 610 might be some of the only non-team personnel in the stadium who aren't sitting in the press box. Am I allowed to cheer and or boo from wherever we're sitting in the stadium? Would that be uncouth if, like, maybe on the TV broadcast you hear Seth Payne screaming profanities or something?
Well, I know you're kidding, because you know how unprofessional it would be, but I can honestly say in my 48 years of being a sports writer, including 45th, I'm working on the Chronicle, I have said things, but I've never, the only time I've ever cheered is when I go to a Baylor game.
Right, but I wouldn't be in the press box. I'd be sitting in a suite.
It doesn't matter. You're in the media, it is very unprofessional for anybody in the media to cheer.
I feel like Seth's kind of off the clock at that point. He's the host of the Countdown show.
Well, let me just say, I would never do anything like that.
Okay. Really?
I'm
going to be honest with you. Every time I sit in the actual stands, I'm like half drunk and screaming out of my mind. I have a good old time when I go as a Texan. I feel like I've got diplomatic immunity. I'm a former player. At that point, I take off my media hat, and I'm just a Texans fan.
So hold up, John. You're saying as a media member, we can't cheer at a game even if we're there as a ticket-paying fan?
Not covering a team. You're not supposed to be unbiased, and of course nobody is. But to me, if you're a member of the media, you should never be cheering or booing
ever.
But sports radio is a different deal, though, man. I don't think we're held to the same standards. Nobody tuning in expects us. I mean, some idiots from other cities do, but nobody tuning in expects us, like Sean and I, to be completely unbiased. I think like we openly profess our fandom. What's that?
Yeah, nobody's completely unbiased. It's impossible.
All right, hang on. Hold on. This is blowing my mind here. So,
really?
John, yes.
You're a professional media person who covers a team, and you cheer for that team when you're in the stands?
Yeah. Like, I've been to games with Amy before. I mean, not anymore because I do the pre and the post, but, boy, before I got to 610, I would go to games with her. And, you know, look, I realized not nearly as many people heard me at the time. I was barely a media member. But still, I wasn't supposed to be cheering back then.
Absolutely not. If you were a journalist, did you major in journalism?
John, I didn't even major in radio. John, I was a finance major. I'm not classically trained. Don't tell Armin, but I'm not classically trained to do this job at all.
We're not journalists. Never call me a journalist.
Even
I guess that's the distinction there.
Yeah.
Well, so, I'll be listening for y'all because you'll be the only ones in the stands doing it.
This is a big time broadcast.
Yeah. I'm like going over in my mind all the different things I've done at NRG Stadium when I'm in the stands or at Toyota Center or Minute Maid or anything. Yeah. I guess I wonder if other media members have been scowling at me that entire time. So, I don't do it in the press box. I would never do that.
So, John, I'm in a sports bar and I'm watching game 6 of the ALCS and Altuve hits a home run and I started hugging strangers. Is that okay?
Let me just put it like, when I go to games and everybody else is up cheering and everything, I'm just sitting there.
Yeah.
People must think I'm from the opposing city because I don't. The only time I let it all hang out is when I'm in McLean Stadium.
That's it, man. You're like one of the guards at Buckingham Palace. Like this John McLean, he's unflinchable. It's incredible.
I'm going to start, you know what I'm going to start doing though? I'm going to start shaming you on social media. I'm going to find pictures of you at Baylor games and I'm going to be like, look at this. Look at this. This guy claims to be a paragon of the industry and it is this shameful behavior, openly cheering for a sports squad.
I'm glad you brought that up. Okay. So John, where does it fall in this mantra of journalism about mocking the team on Twitter and calling them pathetic and horrendous and horrific? What class at Baylor did they teach that to you?
Well, of course, they didn't have anything to teach when I was at Baylor because there's no such thing as Twitter.
Come on, I didn't want a literal answer. How do you explain yourself on Twitter, John? You can write
and broadcast anything you want because you're not being a fan. You're being, to me, a journalist.
Okay.
When y'all are on the air, you're being a journalist. So when I'm typing and I'm working at a game, I can type anything I want, say anything I want on 610, but it's just when I'm at the game, then I behave in a totally different way.
You're tweeting at the game. You're sitting in the press box.
It's my job. I'm supposed to. I'm not a fan.
John McLean joining us for his weekend.
And I've never been in the stadium to watch a Texans game. I was thinking about that,
too.
Oh,
it's wild, yeah.
I've only been in a stadium for an NFL game once, and that was in the year Texas Stadium opened that I went up wants to see what the big deal was from Waco.
That's incredible. That's incredible. John McLean joining us. John, we're running out of a clock here with you. What's your prediction for the game on Sunday?
S-P-I-R-I-T. I've got spirit. So I'm going to pick Ravens about 33-21.
A-W-E-S-O-M-E. Awesome. Awesome. That's what we need.
John, listen. John is going to be completely impartial, but if the Ravens blow this one, he'll get a Texans tattoo on his forearm.
That's it.
That's how much he'll prove. He's going to prove that he doesn't care about the Texans.
Text message. There it is. John McLean thinks everybody at 610 is unprofessional, but especially that unprofessional Seth Payne.
Oh, I know. I know that.
That's funny.
When I had to defend my honor at the Super Bowl, he was disgusted with me.
John McLean joining us for his weekly visit. John, what do we keep our eye out for in the Chronicle this weekend?
Aaron Wilson, I got podcasts. We got things every day, columns and stories. And I'm writing for tomorrow, J.J. Watt, talking about what I'm going to focus on is having played a game against Lamar Jackson, an advantage. And next day, I'm going to talk to Tim Kelly about speeding up his offense. Guys, thank you very much. I enjoyed it. Remember, you always got to have spirit.
A-W-E-S-O-M-E. John McLean is awesome.
I do that at Astros games, but I don't cover the Astros.
Okay, well, fair enough. All right, good. At least
see
I know this.
See you, guys. Thank you.
See you, John. Yeah, it was good visit, as always. John McLean joining us for his weekly visit. All right, we head into the 9 o'clock hour. Bottom of the 9 o'clock hour, we will carry the Bill O'Brien press conference live here on Sports Radio 610. As we head into the 9 o'clock hour, let's shift gears for a minute. Tillman Fertitta revealed his plans for who's going to lead this Rockets team going forward. He did it on CNBC. He did it yesterday. We have it for you next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.